So the reason why I stopped where I did at lunchtime is that we're now going into a section in which Jesus tells Louisa the difference between being resigned to the divine will and actually living in the divine will. That's the first one. And then he's going to teach her the difference between true sanctity and false sanctity. Now, unfortunately, you'll have names and addresses on the false sanctity. It's given so clearly. Okay. So this kind of instruction is the basic instruction that we need in our pockets going to Dromantine. You actually, so you recognize things. Not that you have to remember it all in your head, but it'll actually be in your heart. And so when things come up on that, you'll find it comes up because you've put it in. Is that okay? So I want to pick up in order to obey, Louisa said, in order to obey the command that was given to her, Louisa said, I want to say a few words about the difference between being resigned to the divine will and living in the divine will. Now, give yourself a heading for that paragraph so that when you need to go back to it for reference, you don't have to say, well, where on earth is it? It's somewhere in volume 12. So living in the divine will versus resignation is your heading. First of all, let's take living resigned in the divine will. According to my poor opinion, Louisa said, this means to resign oneself to the divine will in everything. Now, you need to underline the everything, because we might do it in 90% of the things. Both in prosperous and in adverse circumstances. That means that everything's fine until it's something I don't really want or something I'm not comfortable with, and I mightn't resign myself to that. And this is where this kind of instruction is actually very important for us, because you might say, you know, in the morning, I want to resign myself to God's will. Then something happens during the day and you find yourself reacting to it. So you discover in your experience that there was a difference between your words and your actions. So whether the conditions are actually prosperous or adverse, you still accept God's will. You look at the divine will in everything. In other words, there's no coincidences. There's only God incidences. And whatever happens to you, it's either the direct will of God or the permissive will of God, whichever it is. The order of the divine dispositions, which it has over all people, such that not even one hair can fall from our head if the Lord doesn't want it so. That's Luke 12:7. Every hair on your head is counted. It seems to me like a good son who goes wherever his father wants and suffers whatever his father wants. So the good son will go and will suffer whatever the father wants. Poor or rich, it is indifferent to him. He is content only with being what the father wants. Now, St. Paul says that he arrived at that point in Philippians 4:12. If he receives or asks for an order to go somewhere for the fulfillment of some business, he only goes because the Father wants it. So here's us checking out that every single thing, does the Lord want it? Is this something God actually wants? But in the meantime, he must take some refreshment, stop and rest, have some food, deal with people. And therefore, he has to put much of his own will into it, even though he goes because the Father wanted it. Now, that's the position that most people find themselves in when they start out on this journey. Like, you're involved in everyday business and all the rest of it. You want to do God's will, but in the actual detail, you may not even have checked it out whether the Lord actually wants it. However, in many things, he finds himself in the circumstance of doing them by himself. That means not into the divine will. How many people have even admitted, sure, I didn't even remember for the last 3 hours that I should be having contact with the Lord. Do you know what I mean? So you just get totally involved in what you're doing. He may be far away from the Father for days or months without receiving specifically of the will of the Father in all things. So you can slip back into ordinary thinking without even noticing. So For one who lives resigned to the divine will, it's almost impossible not to mix his own will with it. Now, that's the extremely important statement. And you know, from those of you who have studied the human will versus the divine will, that that can be lethal. So if we're back at this point, then it's nearly impossible not to mix the two wills. Or you can't mix the two wills, to shift from one to the other. He may be a good son, but he will not have in everything the thoughts, the words, the life of the Father fully portrayed in him. In fact, since he has to go, return, follow, deal with others, love is already broken, because only continuous union, this is the next bit you underline, only continuous union makes love grow, and it never breaks. And the current of the will of the Father is not in continuous communication with the current of the will of the Son in what we have just read. And in those intervals, the Son may get used to doing his own will. However, I believe, she said, that this is actually the first step towards sanctity. At least she's admitted there's some good in it. So for us trying to live in the divine will, that's a very good correction moment, you know, to make sure, am I consciously living the divine will at every moment? Now, the second one she wants to deal with is those who actually live in the divine will. So these people are going to live at a much higher plane altogether. I'd like to the hand of my Jesus to write this, she said. He alone can tell all the beauty, the goodness and the sanctity of living in the divine will. I am incapable. I have many concepts about it in my mind, but I lack the words. My Jesus, pour yourself into my word that I may say what I can. Now, those of you doing the seminars or anything else in Drumantine, there's your prayer. Jesus, I lack the ability, but I ask you to pour yourself into my word so that it's your words that come out and not mine. See, I told you that all the preparation was here, didn't I? So, living in the divine will means being inseparable. So there's your glass of water. The two sections of water cannot be separated. No chemical process can separate them. Why? Because they're identical. So the first thing is being inseparable with the Lord. The second thing is doing nothing by yourself. So this is a great deal of discernment for you today now. Doing nothing by yourself. Because before the divine will, one feels incapable of everything. So if you feel incapable of what you've been asked to do, that's perfectly okay. Anyone living in the divine will has the realistic realization that none of us are capable of anything except sin. Okay. So he does not ask for orders, nor does he receive them, because he feels incapable of going on his own. That's John 15:5. Without me, you can do nothing. And he says, Lord, if you want me to do this, let us, look at the plural, do it together. There's your second answer for those doing the seminars. Okay, we're going to do this together. And if you want me to go, let us go together, Philippians 4:13. So, he does all that the Father does. Now notice the other son went about and did his own business and all the rest of it. He did love his father and he did serve his father, and to some extent he did actually obey him, but he was living his own life as well. So this one does all that the Father does. If the Father thinks, he makes the thoughts of the Father his own. And he has not one thought more than those of the Father. Now that's what we've been reading about in the texts I gave you from John's Gospel. Because that's what Jesus is saying. I only do what my Father tells me to do. I only say what my Father tells me to say, and so on. But I want to give you 2 Corinthians 10, verses 1 to 4. Because in that section, St. Paul tells us that every thought must be captured and given to Christ. Now, if you want a penance for Lent, there you have it. Never mind all the other things you thought you were going to do. If you try and capture every thought and give it to Christ, you'll be fully occupied in penance. Unless, of course, you're a saint, and then we'll congratulate you. Because half the time we don't even know we're wandering off in our own thoughts. We don't even know we're having a dialogue with ourselves and the Lord isn't in it. And we don't even know that we're criticising our neighbour. And it's inside of me. It's nothing to do with them. Oh, it has something to do with them. And many people think that my own thoughts are private. They don't affect anybody else. Your own thoughts are part of the wharf and roof of the whole planet. They do affect everybody. And what's even worse, your thoughts are written on your face. Everybody knows, at least not everybody, the people who have any level of discernment can read your eyes. Don't you know, looking into another person's eyes, what they're thinking of you? Yeah, of course you do. Even a kid in the cradle gets that, and they start playing the mother off the father before they're walking. They learn how to read faces, and they learn how to read eyes. Okay. Yeah, your thoughts are on your. And if you want to know what people think of you, I got this in a couple of classes I did on psychology many years ago. I don't remember half of what they told, but I remember a couple of things. One of the things they said was, if you want to find out what people think of somebody in the room, all you do is let that person go out the door and then let them come in and see the reaction of everybody. Now, most of them will try to hide their reaction, but you see it on their face. Not again. Annoyed that the person went out and come in. But they're not going to say anything because they're too polite. But it's on their faces. And sometimes it's just an expression, or it's a stiffening of the body or whatever it is. Everything that's in the mind has been expressed. And they actually did some experiments with this. It was hilariously funny because you actually did read everybody's thoughts. So when you read in the gospel that Jesus read everybody's thoughts, there was nothing. There was nothing. He knew how to read their bodies as well. So capturing every thought and giving it to Christ is a major operation. You won't know that unless you try it. If the Father looks, if he speaks, if he works, if he walks, if he suffers, if he loves, he too looks at what the Father looks at, repeats the words of the Father, works with the hands of the Father, walks with the feet of the Father, suffers with the same pains as the Father, and loves with the same love as the Father. That means total commitment, with the word total underlined. Now, in what I've just read, there's absolutely no room for self. None whatsoever. He lives not outside, but inside the Father. And therefore, he is the reflection and the perfect portrait of the Father. That's 2 Corinthians 3:18. I also want to give you Hebrews 1:3. Hebrews 1:3 says that Jesus is the icon of the Father, and we are supposed to be the icon of Jesus. Okay. But all his interior is as though interwoven with the interior of the Father, transformed, dissolved completely, and you repeat, completely, in God. That's Ephesians 4:23. Now notice the dissolved, and the word completely is repeated because the Lord knows us very well. I can't usually quote anything from the higher volumes, that is over volume 20, but there is one bit, and I don't know, it may be volume 23, where the Lord says, make sure your nothingness is empty. Now that really went through me, and I remembered it. And I said, you know us very well. It's like we drink a cup of tea, and if you take the cup from the person to go and wash it, there's a little drop of tea still left in it. It's not completely taken. The little tiny drop of coffee is still in the cup. It's not completely taken. And we're not completely given. There's something inside of us that says, well, you know, I have to survive, you know. And I have to give a tiny little bit for myself. Now, that tiny little bit ensures you won't ever be canonized. And then Louisa goes on, oh, the rapid and sublime flights of this child into the divine will. The divine volition is immense. Watch this now. In every instant, it circulates in every person. The divine will gives life to everything and orders everything. And the soul, moving within this immensity, flies into all souls and helps all souls, loves all souls, but as Jesus himself helps and loves. That's John 13:34. You do it the way Jesus does it, not the way human beings do things. And after he has done everything, he says, I have done nothing, Jesus did it. Now, I should have the reference for that, but I'm lazy and I haven't. All I know is it's in Luke 17. We're only unprofitable servants. Do you remember? When the work is all done. And this is all my contentment, that miserable as I am, Jesus has given me the honour to keep me in his divine will, to let me do what he himself has done. If we ever grasp the enormity of the privilege, we'll do it. So the enemy cannot bother this child. Now, why can't the enemy bother this child? Because this child is in the divine will and the devil can't touch the divine will. But up to the time when we're living fully and completely in the divine will, the enemy can attack because we're not completely there. Do you get it? Mm-hmm. Now, you know this better than I do because you've reared children. So you know that a child hides themselves behind the couch, but they leave the leg out to make sure you know that they're actually there. They're not completely hidden. They're not completely hidden. Okay, so it's the ones who are completely in the divine will that the enemy can't get at them. But the other ones with the leg out, just for safety's sake, they can be attacked. Okay. So the enemy can't bother the child in the divine will. Whether he has done well or badly, little or much, because Jesus himself did everything. Now, there's a slight contradiction in that sentence, whether you did badly or goodly, little or much, because Jesus did everything. Jesus doesn't do anything badly. So what she's saying is whether you perceive that you yourself have not done well, in fact it is well because Jesus has done it. Is that okay? Yeah. It's like me and the IT. I never do it well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. These machines drive me crazy. But the Lord helps. And so you manage to get a recording in spite of me. So he does everything well. He does everything together with Jesus. Now, Jesus is the most peaceful one. He is peace. Now, I would have to give you far too many references in the Bible for that. You know that on the day he was born, that he was introduced as the Prince of Peace. Okay. So, he is not subject to anxiety. Look at this now, and it appears on the surface as a contradiction. He loves no one, and he loves everyone. What does that mean? It means he has no attachments. You see, we can say we love somebody, but in actual fact, we're either holding on to them or depending on them or whatever else. So the attachment means you're not really loving them objectively in their own shoes, letting them be their own unique persons. He does. He actually allows each one of us to be our own unique selves, and he loves everyone. But he loves them on a divine level. It's not a human level. It can be said that he is... Pardon me, we're now talking about the soul in the divine will who will behave like Jesus, who will love without attachment, okay? And therefore, you will love people in their own shoes. and you will discover the uniqueness of each person. And I think that's the wonder of being a divine will family, that the uniqueness of each person is allowed to express itself, and that you love the uniqueness of each person. And therefore, there's enormous variety and there's enormous interest as well. But there's no clinging onto anybody. Is that okay? So we're doing in the divine will what Jesus did himself on the earth. And so we're loving people divinely. Now, this is the unconditional love that you'll hear more about. It can be said that this soul is the repeater of the life of Jesus, the organ of his voice. That means that if you have to speak at any level with people, giving seminars or talks or classes or anything else, that you simply push yourself aside and ask the Lord to come through, and he will. He comes through in the most extraordinary way. I mean, I've had the experience of, because I've been doing this for years, specifically, sometimes I would do it with my body just so that to remind myself that I'm putting myself aside to let the Lord come through. And there have been times when I was speaking publicly and the words that came out of my mouth were changed as they came out of my mouth. I was hoping to say something and the people heard something else. And I remember on one of these occasions, I was really struck by what came out and I said, "Oh, that's interesting." And the people said, "You saying that?" And I said, "Well, that's the first time I heard it." You know, because it can be very exciting then, you know, because you can be trying or hoping to say something, say in a seminar or a teaching or something, and you just say to the Lord, "You come through, you do it." Because I continuously say to the Lord, "They don't want to hear me. If they had you teaching them, do you think I would get a look in?" Forget about it. They wouldn't. It's you they want. So I push myself aside and you come through. So you become the repeater of the life of Jesus, the organ of his voice, the heartbeat of his heart, and the sea of his graces. You become the source of grace for so many people. Isn't that just incredible? True sanctity. Now we're going on to true sanctity and false sanctity. We have just been through whether you are really in the divine will or you're simply resigned to it. So true sanctity, I believe, consists only in this. All other things are only shadows. Larvae, I think using that word is absolutely extraordinary. Spectres of sanctity. In other words, people can be going around dressed in all kinds of religion and attending all kinds of services and everything, but there might be no sanctity. Because if there's no real love and there's no gift of themselves, and if there's no sacrifice, then all you have is religion. And religion can be dangerous. Very interesting. And you need to know that the devil doesn't mind you having religion. He only minds if you love. He only minds if you're prepared to sacrifice yourself. He only minds if you're going to really surrender to God. He does mind that, and he'll try and stop it, because that's the real thing. So, in the divine will, virtues take their place in the divine order, not in the human order. While outside it, in the human order, they're subject to self-esteem, vainglory, and passions. For example, someone said to me not so long ago, "You must have felt a bit of pride about that." I said, "Pardon?" Just because I had done well with something, do you know what I mean? I said, "But we live in a no place place. We're living in a down there in the nothingness place." I said, there's no room for pride in nothingness. If you know anything about nothingness, there's no room for pride. For pride, you need to lift your head up to exalt yourself. But you see, it's where we're coming from. It's the world we're coming out of. And so people think, you know, "I'm the great me because I can do it. I'm the great healer, or I'm the great teacher." They wouldn't say it. You know what I mean? But their behavior tells you that that's what they think. And nobody can do this except me. You know, so there's the self-esteem, vainglory. That's glory given to yourself, not God. And to passions, they're all the emotions allowed to express themselves. Oh, how many good works and how many attended sacraments are to be cried over before God and to be repaired for because they are empty of divine will. And therefore, they are without fruits. I once heard a Protestant preacher speak about church attendees as pew warmers. I've never forgotten it because he was trying to say to them, the fact that you attend church or you attend something religious does not mean that anything in you has surrendered to God. So you're only a pew warmer. Isn't that frightening? Mm-hmm. Now, Louisa is saying the same thing just in her own language. So let's look at it. How many good works? That means, you know, you've gone to Africa helping Concern or Troca or something. You know what I mean? How many attended sacraments are to be cried over before God and to be repaired for because they are empty of divine will? They're going for any reason on the planet except God's will. You want to be seen at a funeral, but you're not going to worship God and you're not going to pray for the dead. And they are without fruits. Heaven willing that all would comprehend or understand true sanctity. Oh, how all other things would disappear. So now she's going to talk about pious practices, so fasten your seatbelts. Therefore, many find themselves on the false way of sanctity. Many place sanctity in pious practices. Now, the translation has a duplicate, a pious practices of piety. So that's a contradiction in English, just pious practices. That means they put all sanctity in novenas and pilgrimages and going to holy places and lighting candles and God knows what else they do. Okay. They place sanctity in these practices. And woe to those who move them. Now, to illustrate that, I have to explain something that happened to me in Canada. When I was travelling around the world speaking in churches, I always asked the priest to open the church very early in the morning so that I could have a bit of time to pray before the crowds came. Most of them did it, some of them didn't. Most of them did it. And this particular church, I was praying all alone. There wasn't another soul. There was only the Blessed Sacrament and myself. And we were getting on fine. And I had my eyes closed and I was totally interior. Never noticed somebody coming into the church. Next thing, I got an almighty dig in my right arm. Get out of there. That's my place. And I looked up and there was this angry woman arriving early for her prayers. And I said, the church is empty. That's my place, she said. And so I made a second attempt. Then I gave up. I said to her, Jesus is here. That! I got up. I went as far from her as I could get. Do you see the contradiction? This is what Louise is talking about. That you can, some people can really fool themselves that they are getting close to God when in actual fact they're not. She was so stuck to that tiny spot. I mean, how was I supposed to know? Anyway, never mind. I don't know what she thought when I got up to give the talk. She said how they deceived themselves. If their wills are not united with Jesus, and also transformed in him, which is continuous prayer. Now, continuous prayer is 24/7, 365. It's not 1 hour in the day, because prayer is communion with God. And communion doesn't have to be with words. It's continuous prayer. With all their pious practices, their sanctity is false. They're deceiving themselves. Now, you see, the devil doesn't mind you going to church. He doesn't mind you doing all kinds of practices. He only minds if you surrender to God's will and if you sacrifice yourself to love others, that you're really giving, that you're prepared to love. That's what he minds. He doesn't mind the other stuff. And it shows how these souls pass very easily from pious practices to defects, So I'm attacked with anger, and I'm attacked physically as well in the church, because I'm in the spot that she's stuck to. And they pass very easily from this to amusements. Now, I had the very interesting experience of someone who came to my classes. I won't give you any more detail because the island is too small. And this person, or persons in the plural, were presenting themselves as very holy, very pious people and all the rest of it. And I don't know how it happened, but I just got into conversation with them anyway and asked them what they were doing for Lent. And they went, "We're going on a world tour for Lent." So I smiled and I said, "Have a good day." For Lent. And they were going on a luxury cruise. I said, "Why don't you wait until Easter?" But they didn't hear that. So they pass rather quickly from pious practices to defects, to amusements, to the sowing of discord and other things. I'm glad she didn't tell us what the other things were. Oh, how dishonoured is this kind of sanctity. So that's that one. So the second example she gives you are others place sanctity in going to church, attending all the services, but their will is far from Jesus. And it shows how these souls have little care for their own duties. Now we have it. So here's someone who will attend everything that's going on in the church, but they're not available to their spouse, and they're not available to their children, and they're not carrying out their duties. And one of the aspects of God's will for every single person on the planet is to carry out the duties of your state in life. So they are putting the emphasis entirely on the wrong thing. And you know that if the parent is missing from the home when they're small children, it doesn't matter whether the parent is doing good or bad, the children will suffer desperately because the parent is missing. And if these people are hindered, they get angry, they cry that their sanctity goes up in the air. They lament, they disobey, and they are the wounds of the family. So you can see that their lives are in disorder, because disorder has been described perfectly there. Oh, what false sanctity, she said. Now, the next example she's going to give us is not really belonging to our age, but it was definitely a problem in Louise's time. Louise's time, therefore, is early 20th century. And apparently the thing was, you were supposed to have a spiritual director and you were supposed to tell your sins in minute detail. And you were supposed to go over them and over them. I couldn't even imagine it. It's like instead of putting the clothes in the washing machine and getting rid of the stuff and getting it dried and back, that you examine every minute detail in every garment. I don't know if you'd be able for that. No, I wouldn't. So she says, others place their sanctity in frequent confessions. Now, the frequent confessions here include spiritual direction. So since confession is not all that popular at the moment, this doesn't apply as much to us as it did to them. In minute spiritual direction, in other words, giving minute details. That means they want to massage all their feelings and all their thoughts and all their words and all their actions. And it is literally, on a spiritual level, a self-massage. Sorry for the language. In minute spiritual direction, in having scruples about everything. That's what I mean by you're examining everything in minute detail. But then they have no scruple that their will does not run together with the will of Jesus. And woe to those who contradict them. You see, you'll always know if somebody is doing their own will, anybody else opposing them, and you're in trouble. These souls are like inflated balloons. I love that expression. Let me give you a different expression which will help you to laugh. Windbags. Windbags. Because you know, if you put a pin in the balloon, you get a big bang and that's all. These are like inflated balloons, she said. A little hole is enough for the air to come out and their sanctity goes up in smoke and it falls to the ground. These poor windbags have always something to say. They are mostly inclined to sadness. In other words, they give out about everything. I don't know what you do when you meet somebody where everything is all bad and everything's terrible and they're only telling you negative stuff about absolutely everything. I just say, have a good day. You know, because you couldn't cure them because they're enjoying it. They're mostly inclined to sadness and they live always in doubt. And therefore, they'd like to have a director for themselves who would advise them, give them peace and console them. That's a big bit now. In every little thing. But they are soon agitated, just as they were before. Poor sanctity, how forged it is. Luke 7:24. Now, you've got three different reactions of people to religion here. And all of them is false. And the reason why they're all false is that the person is absolutely locked up in self-love. They're not committed to God's will. They're not committed to unconditional love. They're not committed to sacrifice and so on. So, Louisa said, I would like the tears of my Jesus to cry together with him over these false sanctities. And make everyone know how true sanctity is doing God's will. Green, white and gold. Underline. True sanctity is utterly and completely simple. There's no complication, and in actual fact, you need no spiritual director because it's surrendering to God's will and living in unconditional love. That's it. You're home and dry. You got it. So, I'd like to make everyone know how true sanctity is in doing God's will and in living in the divine will. This sanctity sinks its roots so deep that there's no danger that they will oscillate. Now, you know, the oscillation is the reed blowing in the wind. Do you remember? Yeah. Because it fills earth and heaven, and everywhere it fills its support. It finds its support. This soul is firm. Now, there's your fortitude again. Not subject to inconstancy, nor to voluntary defects. Now, what you've got to underline is voluntary. We all have defects. But an involuntary defect is not a problem. A voluntary defect is. Now, are you sure you know the difference between the two? Okay, I usually take whoever's on my right or on my left as an example. Supposing this person bumps into me at a time when I'm overtired and I'm a bit fragile and I react. That's an involuntary defect because I've reacted because of my tiredness and blah, blah, blah. I just can't take any more. But if I want to pull her down, if I want to give her a piece of my mind, now I'm into voluntary defects. If you're into voluntary defects, no divine will. It's as simple as that. Involuntary defects, very easy to deal with. And the Lord is totally compassionate. You're human, you know, and humanum est errare, it's human to err. Okay. So he doesn't have a problem with involuntary defects. Human beings do. Look at the way she's reacting to stuff. And they don't take into account that at that particular moment you actually couldn't take any more. The cup was overflowing. Okay. But the Lord has no problem with it like that. Okay. So this person is consistent, has no voluntary defects. She's attentive to her duties. Remember one of the false sanctities there? They were in the church, but they weren't at home doing anything that they should do. She is most sacrificed. Now, all the other faults. Actually, it would be very good if you got two pieces of paper and wrote down all the things she says about false sanctity and all the things she says about true sanctity, and you have it. The false sanctities don't sacrifice themselves. They're indulging themselves even when they get spiritual direction. The true sanctity is detached from everyone. In other words, I'm not drawing out of another human being in order for me to live. Is that okay? And so I'm detached from everything. I'm also not leaning on a thing. The only example I can give you of leaning on a thing is I remember speaking to a certain gentleman some years ago, and he was driving a rather large car, as in a Rolls Royce. Now, he did have to have money to get it and everything, but never mind. I said to him, why do you need a large, luxurious car? All we need is four wheels under us to get us from A to B. And depending on what territory you're in, you might need a stronger car or a lighter car. He said, woman, he said, you have no idea what you're talking about. I said, tell me. He said, this is better than having an affair. I said, you poor soul. Not only can you not take a material thing with you when you go to the real place, but you can't take the attachment either. I said, you poor soul. I said, to me, you're poverty stricken. And he looked at me, of course, as if I had come out of the mentler. We have to be detached from everyone and everything, even from directions themselves. That is something that might be very strange to you. Louisa is speaking in the early 20th century, when people were so attached to their spiritual directors, you know what I mean? And I go to Father so-and-so, and my spiritual director is better than yours. You've heard four-year-olds saying, my daddy's better than yours, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know the spiritual age then. Okay. And Louisa says, you have to be detached even from the directions themselves. Now, Louisa had a whole squad of spiritual directors. She didn't ask for them, but the Lord insisted on her having them. And she said, you even have to be free of what they tell you. You only do God's will. Now, if you've grasped anything in these writings up to volume 12, you realise that none of the priests who were spiritual directors to Louisa could tell her where this thing was going, because none of them had ever heard of divine will. They couldn't. All they could do was help her at the level that they were at. And that's why a lot of the time they caused her a lot of pain. And she had to discern the difference between the level that they were speaking at and the level that the Lord was operating with her. So you've even got to be free of that. You've got to be free of everything. Well, the way the other saints put it is, hold life lightly. And you illustrate it by your fingers, your hand up and your fingers all free, so that water will run through your fingers. Hold life lightly. And St. Therese of Lisieux said that you go to God empty-handed every day so that he will fill it. But if I'm holding on to all the stuff of the past, then there's no space in my hand for anything else. So if I'm attached to the stuff of the past, I can't be open to what's being given to me now. So you've got to be detached from everyone and from everything, even from directions themselves. And since the roots are deep, she rises so high. Now, the image I would give you for that, well, first of all, it's a tree. You know that if a tree grows to a great height, it's supposed to have that level of canopy underground as well to support it. And if it doesn't have, it'll come down in a storm. But the higher the buildings go up, the deeper the roots have got to go down. The foundations have to go down. And if the foundations are not deep, there's no point in building a high building. And spiritually, if our foundations are not deep into humility and nothingness and freedom from self and all the rest of it, if our roots are not down there, there's no point in building, because the first storm will knock you down. So the roots are so deep that she rises so high, and the flowers and fruits bloom in heaven. So the image she has is of a growing thing. And she's so hidden in God. That's Deuteronomy 32:12. The Lord alone is her guide. Deuteronomy 32:12. She's so hidden in God that the earth sees little or nothing of this soul. Now, Louisa is speaking about very advanced stage of union in the divine will here. And since we're only on the journey to this place, you mightn't appreciate that the deeper you get into the divine will, the less you want to be involved out there. The what's out there is a completely different plane altogether where you're at. And you'll find yourself estranged also from people outside, because they're dealing with life at a level that is so low. Recently, I listened to a homily, and as I was listening to it, I just said to the Lord, compared to what I'm hearing, I live on a planet in a galaxy far away. There was no connection. There wasn't even the English language connecting us. Because you're either in the divine will or you're not. So one of the things that we have to acknowledge is, where am I and where do I want to be? Now, the world and everything that's in it is pulling you right down to where they're at. The demon wants to keep you pulled down to where they're at. The Lord wants to lift you up. You have to decide whether you are going there and whether you're going to stay there, because it's a decision at every single moment of your day. It's actually a continuous decision. And gradually you'll get to the place where you're there. But there are certain signs that you will know that you're there, and that is that you actually don't have a need to go places and do things and experience things like other people, because it belongs to a different realm to you. It belongs to a different world. And all your need for going, well, I remember reading this many years ago, my get up and go has got up and went. You actually don't want it. You've arrived, if I can put it the other way. So I'm going to stop in a minute because I'm over my time. But I need to finish this sentence. So the world knows little or nothing about this person. They just think you're just wasting your life. That's grand. So they pay no attention to you. The divine will keeps her absorbed within itself. Now, Louisa is giving you a perfect description of herself. Only Jesus is the author, the life, the form of this sanctity, of this enviable creature. She has nothing of her own, but everything is in common with Jesus. Her passion is the divine will. In other words, what makes you tick? What is it that sort of tells us what you live for? Her passion is the divine will. Her characteristic is the will of her Jesus, and the fiat is her continuous motto. I'm going to stop there. Is that absolutely wonderful? Yeah.